Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 152 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the man who loves Earth Day because it's the one day a year that his Captain Planet cosplay seems less weird. It's Brian. Brian, how are you this week, my friend?
I'm going to tell you something. This has been an amazing week. We've had ups, we've had downs. We've had trials, we've had tribulations, we've had tears, we've had joyous laughter. It's part of the beautiful package that we like to call life. Ron, more importantly, how are you doing?
You know what? I can't complain. I am here. I am ready to do the podcast with you. It's one of the best days of the week for that very reason. So why don't we get things going with our drink of the week? Whoop. Wrong one. Let me hit
the drink of the week.
Nazdrovia.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Slancher.
Who's
drink of the week? Drink of the week.
You know, 3 years into this, you would think I would hit the right button, but still learning, people. Still learning. So, what are you drinking this week, Brian?
I am working on coming out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, not known for their IPAs, Surly Brewing with their Furious IPA. Now, I'm going to first take a sip of it.
It's got a nice amber hue to it, nice head to it, nice
yes.
beer. How is it?
Ron, let me ask you a question. Do you like hops?
To an extent, I do like hops.
Then you will like this fire-hued beer. This is the beer Surly Brewing Company has always dreamed of making. This is the beer that would come to mind when spending the last 2 years tearing down walls, hanging sheetrock, moving kegs, power washing the ceilings, arguing with various agencies, cutting the water main. However, without the Golden Promise malt made by family-owned Simpsons Malt, Furious IPA would just be pissed off.
Oh.
From Scotland, this malt is still produced in the tradition of churning over the barley by hand, resulting in a malt that is unsurpassed in its quality. Golden Promise malt is also extensively used by premium whiskey distilleries such as the Macallan.
Oh, you're a fan of them.
This malt provides the backbone for the intense hop character of this beer. Four American hop varieties are used at the rate of over 3 pounds per barrel. The result is a rich malt sweetness infused with a bright hop flavor and aroma which begins to the end. Coming in at 6.7 ABV, served in 16-ounce cans, Furious IPA from Surly Brewing.
I'm a fan of the 16-ounce can. That seems to be a thing because there's been an aluminum shortage during the pandemic. So a lot of these craft breweries have been going with the 16-ounce can. I like getting that little bit extra, that 4 extra ounces.
I'm going to say this. It's not overly hoppy,
okay,
but it is hoppy. I love the amber color.
It's a good
I would drink beer. Again.
All right.
I would drink again.
Very nice. So, Brian, this week... You know, in the past weeks, you have been accusing me of being bougie, drinking expensive beers, what have you. So I've decided to go back to my roots this week, Brian. Although, I mean, I guess it is kind of fancy because it is the champagne of beers. That's right. It's Miller High Life that we are going with for my drink of the week. From Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I don't even know if they put an alcohol content on the can because it's pretty much like drinking water. But let's see. It's been a number of years since I've had a Miller High Life.
Now, while you're sipping that, I will ask the question of what made you go out of your way to purchase this?
I did not. These were actually in a gift bag from a birthday party we attended. And I was like, well, I don't feel like I hate throwing away beer. But yeah, this is This reminds me why I stopped drinking it.
Can you describe the flavor?
There is none. And I think that's really where it comes down to. Like, I feel like I'm just drinking carbonated water.
Now, do you want to walk me through the malts? Which type of hops are used inside of it? Is it infused with a character?
Well, there's no lactose right off the bat, so you know I have issue with this.
Does it have nitro?
It has no nitro. It doesn't have a pithy story written on the side of the can. No background as to where the hops or the malt or the barley come from.
Is it supporting any type of current social justice program that is going on in the country at the time?
It doesn't say that. As a matter of fact, it's small print. I think it says All Lives Matter on the side of the can.
Oh, you hate it. You hate to see a beer taking political sides.
Yep, exactly. Well, that's it. Brian, you have a good
week. Will you be able to power through it?
I'm not quite sure.
I would like to see you be able to.
All right. I will attempt to finish this by the end of the episode. You Perfect. Have my word on it. In the meantime, it's time for This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 So we almost made it to 3 pages this week, Brian. I had to go to like an 8 font to cram it onto 2 pages. It's just depressing. But we will, as we do every week, we will get through this in This Week in Racism. Starting off in Greensboro, North Carolina, a white official who refused a black resident's request to be addressed by her doctoral title during a televised meeting has been ousted from the Greensboro Zoning Commission. The exchange happened between Tony Collins and Carrie Rosario, an associate professor at UNC Greensboro, towards the end of a zoning commission meeting. Rosario was voicing concerns about a development project near her home, with Collins repeatedly referring to her as Mrs. Rosario, while she repeatedly corrected him to say Dr. Rosario. He then went on to refer to her by her first name, and at one point said, quote, "It doesn't really matter what she liked to be called." The city council decided it did matter, voting to remove Collins from the commission. Coming up to New York City.
Is that necessarily racist? Or is that just being a piece of shit? Like, in the sense of, like, is that different than Tony Rome going after Jim Everett on ESPN all those years ago?
I think it's a guy exhibiting his white privilege and perhaps a little bit of misogyny all at the same time.
Okay. All right. I'll let that one. I can see that point.
Up by you, Brian, in New York City, a Manhattan court clerk is under investigation after allegedly using a racial slur towards a black teenager on a hot mic. Donna Prenito, a clerk at Manhattan Family Court, was overheard using the slur to describe a 15-year-old during a virtual proceeding as the teen was being escorted out of the courtroom. Quote, "Look at this fucking N-word and his fucking pants," the woman allegedly said, before using an Italian-American epithet for black people. Prenito has been suspended without pay pending the outcome of an internal investigation.
Now that was definitely racist. There's no, I'm not even going to question that one.
There's no middle ground. And actually, we have one of our listeners who lives in North Carolina confirming that Tony Collins is a racist.
There we go. Got confirmation. Right. That's really what we need.
All right. Staying in New York City, 2 Asians were attacked this week in Manhattan amid a troubling surge in bias incidents citywide. The latest incident was reported just after 10:30 Tuesday night when a man yelled anti-Asian slurs at a 28-year-old woman riding the northbound C train in Lower Manhattan. The man sat across from the woman and began to harass her, at one point standing up and yelling, "Fuck you, you Asian bitch. Don't fuck with me. I'm going to slap you," before getting off the train. The day prior, a 31-year-old Asian man was punched in the face in Midtown while walking, and the police are investigating it as a bias incident. The man was taken to Lenox Hill Hospital for treatment. Moving upstate to Buffalo, New York, a white lecturer at SUNY Buffalo is under probe by the school because she told students she was sick of talking about the Black Lives Matter movement. A video posted to Instagram on Monday was recorded in the fall during a video conference call for a writing course where part-time lecturer Erica Cope is seen saying, quote, "This is me, but speaking honestly, and you guys have to respond honestly with what you think, with what you feel about this, so I am sick about talking about Black Lives Matter. All right, I said it." The comments came after Cope asked the students to share an opinion that might be considered controversial and cause someone to get canceled. Cope has been referring press inquiries to the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, a nonprofit group that focuses on free speech rights on college campuses. The college's president, Kate Conway Turner, acknowledged the video in a statement late Monday, saying the school's chief diversity officer was gathering all pertinent details in the incident. Brian, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, who runs the Golden Globes, they're under fire after former HPFA president Phil Burke sent out an email referring to Black Lives Matter as a racist hate movement and described BLM organization co-founder Patrice Cullors as, quote, the self-proclaimed trained Marxist. Brian, this is after a report came out this year. Would you like to guess how many Black members it showed the Hollywood Foreign Press Association had at that point? Yes, that is zero. No Black members, and hasn't had any in almost 20 years. After the report came out, the HPFA said they would mandate a 13% minimum of Black members. It also later came out that the HFPA has denied requests to hold press conferences for three major projects with Black-led casts in recent years, including Bridgerton, Girls Trip, and Queen and Slim. Going now to Fairfax County, Virginia. More than 400 convictions could be overturned after prosecutors found evidence the arresting cop was racist. Jonathan Freitag, 25, is accused of making up reasons to pull people over and planting drugs in their vehicles. Freitag was investigated after multiple unrelated complaints. During that investigation, Freitag admitted that the stops were a pretext for searching cars for guns and drugs. Prosecuting attorney Steve Descano said Freitag's stop showed, quote, potentially racially biased motive and racially biased impact. Ex-firefighter Elon Wilson, the last person remaining in jail due to a Freitag traffic stop, was released from prison yesterday, while Freitag was fired earlier this month. Also in Fairfax County, Virginia, a Black soldier who filmed his racist interaction with a white customer at an IHOP has gone viral on TikTok. Joe Jeffers Jr. of the Fort Belvoir Garrison posted about the encounter to his social media accounts on Monday. He, along with some colleagues, all wearing their fatigues, can be seen wrapping up a meal when a white female customer approaches the table. Quote, just so you know, I came back in to give the waitress the rest of the cash from my wallet because you guys are such shitbags, she announces. As he asks her to leave their table, the unidentified woman actually sits down at the booth, preventing Jeffers from exiting. Jeffers ultimately has to climb over his booth to the adjoining one at the next table to escape. When the woman does leave the table, she goes up to other patrons at their table asking, are you Black Lives Matter? Are you Antifa? As the soldiers leave the restaurant, she threatens another customer saying, motherfucker, I will drop you. You want to go? Shortly after she left, she returned asking where the money that she left for the waiter, claiming to have left $30 for a tip. When they reminded her she only left $6, she allegedly told them, quote, you are lying, cocksucking, N-words. Delightful woman right there.
Do we know who this woman is?
She has not yet been identified.
But somebody has to know who she is.
You would think it would come out eventually. In Holdenville, Oklahoma, an Oklahoma teacher was placed on administrative leave after she was caught on camera calling a student the N-word. The video shows an argument between a student and teacher escalating until the student says, you better watch where you touch me, with the teacher responding, you better get yourself over there, N-word. Do it. The incident in question happened on Friday, April 9th. The teacher reportedly did not show up to school on Monday, and she was placed on administrative leave that Tuesday. The school has since said that a full investigation into the incident is underway. Page two. Going out to Colorado.
Whoa. You're telling me we're only halfway done?
We're only halfway there. A judge resigned after telling her colleagues all lives matter and repeatedly using the N-word, among other instances of inappropriate comments. District Judge Natalie T. Chase agreed to step aside after a Colorado Supreme Court censured her based on a report that she had, quote, undermined confidence in the impartiality of the judiciary. Accusations of racism or inappropriate behavior have followed Chase for years. During a road trip to a conference in 2020, Chase asked a family court facilitator who was Black why it was okay for Black people to say the N-word and not whites, and if it was different if the N-word is said with an ER or an A. During the conversation, Chase repeatedly used the N-word. The All Lives Matter declaration came after she asked two Black court employees to explain the Black Lives Matter movement. In the middle of the conversation, Chase supposedly said the cops who killed George Floyd should be investigated, but that, quote, all lives matter. Chase did not challenge accounts of the incidents. And if you want to know how often judges get censored in this country, Brian, she is the fifth in the last 10 years. Doesn't happen often.
What?
You have kind of a pretty shitty individual. Let's see. Also in Colorado, Colorado State Representative Ron Hanks, a newly elected legislator who was reportedly involved in the January 6th insurgency at the U.S. Capitol, took to the state house floor during a debate on a bill aimed at strengthening civics education in the state's public schools. He was accidentally introduced as Colorado lawmaker Representative Mike Lynch and responded, quote, being called Mr. Lynch might be a good thing for what I'm about to say. He then went on to talk about how the three-fifths compromise, the agreement reached by the state delegates at the 1787 Constitutional Convention that every enslaved American would be counted as three-fifths of a person for taxation and representation purposes, he said that was not racist and did not impugn anyone's humanity. Quote, is this really racist to be talking about what the three-fifths compromise was, he asked. I don't think so, and I think it's important. It's part of the civics lesson here. It was brought up and it merits discussion. Few more, Brian. Waco, Texas. Baylor University turned down an honorary customized Jeep Wrangler from a local auto dealer after the dealership's general manager made a racist remark during a TV interview. The Jeep, decked out with the school's national championship logo, was given to the team by Alan Samuels dealership during a celebratory parade. The Jeep was driven by the team for the parade and was to be given to the school for use in upcoming years, but Baylor and coach Scott Drew rejected the vehicle after Alan Samuels' general manager Ted Teague touted the Jeep's potential in a recent television appearance. Specifically, he said the team could, quote, use it to recruit, pull some people out of the hood. Teague would later issue a written apology for his comments, but the university has stood by his decision to not accept the vehicle. In Mount Pleasant, Michigan, a father was outraged after his 7-year-old biracial daughter told him that her teacher and a classmate had cut her hair at school on two separate occasions. The girl's father, Jimmy Hoffmeyer, said that his daughter, Journey, arrived home from Ganyard Elementary on March 24th with a good portion of hair on one side cut. In the first haircutting incident, one of her classmates used scissors to cut her hair on the bus. Hoffmeyer complained to the principal and had the girl's hair styled at a salon to make the different lengths less obvious. But 2 days later, Journey's other side was cut by one of her teachers. Hoffmeyer appealed to the principal of the school and school district authorities, but nothing has come of it. The district superintendent offered to send "I'm sorry" cards to Hoffmeyer's family. The principal told him that there was little that could be done to discipline the teacher other than putting a note in her work file. He called the Mount Pleasant police to address the haircutting incident, but no one followed up. The girl and the teacher are both white. Yep. Going overseas.
Fucking terrible, Ron. I don't know how you just like, this is like rolls out of your mouth and you just keep piling through it. This is fucking terrible.
It really is probably one of the most miserable days of my week when I have to compile this document. So I've got three more. Let's try and get through it. In Oxfordshire, England, a pupil at one of England's leading private schools has been expelled for making derogatory jokes on social media about rape and the Black Lives Matter movement, as well as sending a picture of Nazi soldiers to a Jewish classmate. The 15-year-old, who has not been named, has acknowledged making the TikTok videos and Snapchats in question. However, his parents are demanding justice for him and argue that the school shouldn't be allowed to monitor his social media accounts. Coming back to the States, to Phoenix, Arizona, Bert Colucci of the National Socialist Movement Corporation was arrested and charged with aggravated assault after he allegedly pointed a gun at a group of Black people and threatened to kill them after harassing them and shouting racial slurs at them. Apparently, the altercation started after the white man put trash on the Black people's car. According to the police report, Colucci said he had merely brought his semi-automatic pistol into, quote, low ready position, but witnesses said he had aimed it at them and threatened to kill them. 2 days before his arrest, Colucci had led a white supremacy rally in a local park where a group of 15 reportedly shouted racial slurs at random Black people in the area and challenged them to a fight. And one last thing, we've got a racism rewind.
Racism Rewind.
We'd spoken about Placerville, California, back in December of last year when their local police department came under scrutiny after a group of Proud Boys posed for photos with officers in front of a patrol car at a toy drive. You may also remember that Placerville's nickname is Hangtown because of how they handled the rise in crime that came during California's gold rush. Because of this, their city logo features a noose hanging from a tree. Or it did, as the Placerville City Council finally voted unanimously to change the logo due to its racist connotations. Of course, this has led the Proud Boys and some Placerville residents to rally to have the noose returned to the logo, and there is a grassroots effort to remove all 5 City Council members involved in the decision. And that is This Week in Racism. You all right, Brian? You look like the way I felt when I was typing all this stuff up earlier.
That was a solid 15 minutes. I clocked it.
It seems.
I'm not exaggerating. That was genuinely 15 minutes. Yeah. And I will say, of all the stories that you just ran through, the one about the little girl getting her hair cut twice is the most offensive of them all.
Right. Yeah, it's I can't even. I gotta move on, or I'm just gonna get more depressed than I was earlier. So now, normally, this is where we would give you our beef of the week, but as we mentioned earlier, it is Earth Day, and you know, a beef of the week isn't always environmentally feasible or sustainable. So this week, we give you our plant-based gripe of the week.
Ron and Brian's plant-based gripe of the week.
All right, Brian, what's your gripe this week?
Joe Biden.
Really? President Biden?
He is fucking up the economy, Ron.
How is he doing that?
All right. So today, and it came out later on in the afternoon. A lot of people may not have seen this, but it is something very concerning. Oh, excuse me. Oh, where'd that come
right from? There.
Oh, fuck. Was that audible or no?
It's very audible and it sounded concerning, but regardless, tell us what's bothering you about Sleepy Joe.
All right. So today, President Joe Biden announced that he is going to propose doubling the tax rate that Americans pay on investments returns when they sell stocks and assets. Under his proposal, the federal capital gains tax rate is going to increase to 43.4%. It's currently 23.8%. A lot of people are looking at the stock market, and they're saying, "Hey, how can I make some money off of this?" But this is not the way to go about it. Famed American economist Karl Rove earlier today said that Biden's proposed tax return is going to kill more than 500,000 jobs in the United States. It's going to reduce our GDP by 1.6%. And what I think people fail to understand is that investors support American companies here, Ron, by handing over their hard-earned money so that these companies may use these funds to create jobs, employing hardworking Americans who will use their salaries on American goods and services. By going after investors, you are now robbing those American companies of those financial means for them to create jobs.
And I think the percentage
this is going to be
New York and California.
This is going to be devastating to the American economy during a pandemic when so many Americans are on such thin ice. That for Biden to decide that he is going to go after the capital gains tax, I just think it shows just how out of touch he is with America.
So Brian's message to President Biden, leave alone our stocks.
Stonks.
Ron?
Yes.
What is your plant-based gripe of the week?
You know, and it's ironic, I didn't intentionally plan it this way, but on Earth Day, my gripe is it's with the environment, because I don't get why it's spring, why it's late April, and why it's still so cold. I mean, there was even snow in some areas, but I'm out mowing my lawn today in 45 degree weather, and that shouldn't happen, Brian. I've heard all about global warming, but it doesn't seem warmer to me.
Well, I think that global warming was a reference to the overall increase in the temperature on the planet. It is not saying that 365 days a year, it's going to be warmer than it was 100 years ago.
Listen, I am an American. And if there is one thing that I'm allowed to do as an American, it's allowed to only look at the world based on my surroundings and take everything literally. So if it is cold here, then global warming cannot exist.
Okay. That All is. Right. So do you have a proposal on how to make it not be cold in April?
I do not. Again, I think it is my right as an American to complain about how things are going and yet not have any solutions to offer up.
You, sir, are an American.
Thank you. Thank you. Speaking of America, Brian, was there anything big that happened in the country this week? Any court cases that potentially were decided, verdicts rendered, people sent
to federal prison? I don't watch a lot of court TV, Ron. I'm going to be honest with you. I know that it is something you and the wife like to record during the day when you're working so that you can catch up on the DVR at nighttime. Nancy Grace just doesn't do it for me.
Really?
So, I mean, sexually she does, but as a news source, no, not at all. I believe that there was, you know what, now that you mention it, I believe there was a verdict in the case in Minnesota. Yes. I believe it was the George Floyd trial.
The George Floyd trial, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin.
Time out.
Yes.
You're supposed to stop me. This was not the George Floyd trial. Ah. This was the Derek
Chauvin.
This is the Derek Chauvin trial. George Floyd was never given a trial. He was murdered by the police.
In cold blood.
This is the Derek Chauvin trial.
And he was convicted of murder and manslaughter on Tuesday. His bail was revoked. He went immediately into custody and will await sentencing. Could receive up to 40 years based on Minnesota sentencing guidelines. They estimate he will probably get somewhere in the 12 and a half to 15 year range.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Because you seem to be plugged in. You seem to be on it. Educated, informed, honorable.
Yes, we get it.
Truthful. Okay.
All of it.
How is it possible that he was guilty of second degree murder, third degree murder, and manslaughter, all by the one act of putting his knee on somebody's neck to the point where the person died? And I'm not saying he's not guilty. We all watched that video, 9 minutes long of him snuffing out the life of another human being. He deserves to be in jail.
Right.
My question is, how can you be guilty of two different types of murder when all you did was kill one person?
Obviously you as a lawyer, you put multiple charges out there in the hopes that, you know, if you're not able to hit the highest, then maybe you get the conviction of the lowest. But when, you know, the jury does have the ability to, you know, to pick all of the above, because in essence, you know, when you look at the description of the three charges, you know, he was, you know, he was guilty. So you look at second degree murder, that is causing the death of a human being without intent while committing or attempting to commit an assault. When you look at third degree murder, that's unintentionally causing a death by committing an act that is eminently dangerous to other persons while exhibiting a depraved mind with reckless disregard for human life. And then the manslaughter is creating an unreasonable risk by consciously taking the chance of causing death or great bodily harm to someone else. So the jury decided that his actions met the qualifications of all three charges.
But it's not an either or.
It can be. It's not.
Where I got very confused. I got very confused on Tuesday because I was expecting guilty on second degree murder, which he was guilty of.
Right.
But I did not understand how he could be guilty of manslaughter as well as second degree murder.
Again, I think because you have certain, because of the verbiage of the different charges, you know, and again, it could have been a case of he could have been acquitted of second and third degree murder and, you know, convicted of manslaughter. But once he was convicted of second degree murder, the other pieces just kind of fell into place at that point, because, you know, if he's guilty of something that severe, then definitely he met the guidelines. And I think also, you know, when the jury returns that, if it's a situation of, you know, this goes to an appeals court, which it most certainly will, you know, an appeals court could decide to overturn the murder charges and leave the manslaughter charges intact.
And of course it's going to appeals.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Right. Who's paying for this guy's defense? The police department, the city?
I'm not sure. I know the police union was paying for it to an extent. I don't know if after he got fired, if that continued. They should get their money back.
His lawyer was atrocious.
Well, and again, how do you, you know, you literally have a video of your client kneeling on some guy's back for 9.5 minutes almost. And I mean, and I think some of the most damning testimony was the doctor that literally pointed out in the video, I think it was 6 or 7 minutes in, where he was like, George Floyd is now dead. He has breathed his last breath. And now he is continuing to put his full weight on a dead man's body. I mean, I think that really drove home to the jury, yeah, you know, the callousness of this offense. It shows you where we're at in this country, where there was a level of doubt and a level of surprise and shock that the guilty verdicts actually came back.
I will take it a step further in saying that the bar is so incredibly low that this was seen as a cause for a celebration that he was found guilty. Like, people were taking to the streets to celebrate. And we all watched the video. We watched the man die. We watched George Floyd beg for his life. We heard him say multiple times that he was struggling to breathe. You saw Derek Chauvin show zero concern for the health of the person that he was in the act of arresting. I did miss that point where the doctor said he's dead at this point. I may go back and watch that. Yeah. But the fact that the bar is so low, that our expectations of the American justice system and how it favors police officers who kill in the act of their job, I don't know how. To me, it was just more of a sad statement of American society, that having watched that video, having, you know, seen the highlights of this trial, that there was doubt amongst any American that this man was going to walk free at the end of this.
Again, that's the problem with our system. And yeah, and I think the key thing that a lot of people said afterwards is, you know, this verdict wasn't justice, it was accountability. And hopefully that is what, you know, we will see. But, you know, clearly this is just a very small step in a long journey to be traveled. I think that, again, was really driven home when, while we were waiting for the verdict to be read, police in Columbus, Ohio, shot and killed 16-year-old Makia Bryant. They were responding to a call at her foster home. There had been, you know, people calling in saying teenagers were trying to attack her with a knife. She came out of the house, went after one of the teenagers. She apparently had a kitchen knife and was shot dead by police officer Nicholas Reardon. The Columbus police were quick to release the body cam footage of what happened. So we're going to show that to you real quick. So 10 seconds at the scene, and the officer shoots and kills a 16-year-old girl. And, you know, it's tough to watch, and, you know, you can understand it was a very intense situation. There was a lot going on. But the question that arises in a situation like this, that always arises in a situation like this, is why are police able to de-escalate situations where it's white people involved? You know, why are people able to take white people into custody safely and black people end up dying? You know, and the ones that always get brought up, you know, in a situation like this, you look at Kyle Rittenhouse. The Kenosha.
Who's Kyle? Remind me of Kyle Rittenhouse. Who was that kid?
The Kenosha, Wisconsin shooter. The guy whose mom drove him to the protest in Kenosha, carrying his
from another state, right?
Carrying an AR-15. He kills two people and is still armed, but is apprehended alive. And as we will cover in a little bit, we have come to find that his defense received donations from police officers and words of encouragement from the police. We look at Dylan Roof, who a few years back, he was the Charleston church shooter that killed 9 African Americans in an attempt to start a race war. He was apprehended alive, and the police brought him Burger King while they were questioning him. And even, you know, we're going back probably about a year now. This is in New York. A man swinging an axe at New York police officers.
You're gonna die! Step back! You put that down now! Put your hand down!
So that was 10 seconds, the same amount of time as the previous video. 10 seconds of a man swinging an axe at two New York police officers. That video actually continues for about another 45 seconds or so.
Did they shoot him eventually?
They did not shoot him eventually. He was apprehended alive.
Ron, this has been a rough week. This is a rough week. It's 38 minutes into this show, and I am spent. Emotionally, this is fucking depressing.
And of course, and you know, not even the lone shooting this week, where in North Carolina, police fatally shot Andrew Brown Jr. Apparently, they had gone to his property to execute a search warrant. He apparently got into his car, attempted to drive away, and early reports say that multiple officers fired into his vehicle, killing him on site. But they have not released body cam footage on that, because in the state of North Carolina, police departments do not have to release the footage without a court order. And the police have decided not to release that. North Carolina Bureau of Investigations is handling the investigation into this. So we will see what will happen. But according to witnesses and family members, he was unarmed. Again, you know, you can always make the argument, should he have driven away? No, probably not. But that is not a death sentence.
But that's also, should the cops all have multiple, should multiple police officers have fired into the vehicle?
Right. You know, police are not supposed to kill guilty people or innocent people. It's not typically how it works, but. All right.
Tell me you have something to lift the mood. I am hurting right now.
I mean, I guess in a little bit of karma, we talked a bit just a minute ago about how there has been a data breach involving the donations that were made to Kyle Rittenhouse The Kenosha shooter, and the identities of the people that donated to Kyle's defense were released, and a number of them were attached to people's official email addresses, finding out that there were a lot of police officers and public officials that donated to this murderer's defense fund.
Now, were there any current events-based podcasts that were caught in this net?
Not that we were aware of. So there's already been...
I must have used your email address. Okay.
Maybe so.
Now it makes sense. Now it makes sense.
But this has led to a police officer in Virginia getting fired after donating to Kyle's legal defense fund. Norfolk Police Lieutenant William Kelly anonymously gave $25 to this fundraiser in September with the comment, "God bless. Thank you for your courage. Keep your head up. You've done nothing wrong. Every rank and file police officer supports you. Don't be discouraged by actions of the political class of law enforcement leadership." He was fired after an internal investigation. And Brian, you actually feel some sort of way about this.
You know what? I think I may have just changed my mind. No. I'm going to be very honest with you.
Yes, she would.
I believe that a human being who happens to be a police officer has a right to donate his money that he earns, however he goes about doing it, whether it's, you know, taking money off of drug dealers or I don't know. But like, he has a right to donate to whatever causes he wants to donate to.
Okay.
But the message, the note that you just read me, suddenly makes me not feel First Amendment-y in any way.
It's one thing if he would have just donated. You're saying,
yeah, like I don't believe that somebody
message to go along with it.
I believe that he has a right as an American to sit there and say, "I'm going to donate to this kid's defense." Okay. I don't believe that he should lose his job as a result of that. And at the same time, hearing that message left me feeling so gross that a police officer is backing up someone that traveled out of state with a assault rifle to defend an area that did not require defending, that even the local police were handling. And kills two people in the process. Gotta say, fuck them.
Yeah,
fuck them.
I think I can back you up on that one. We also,
speaking of fucking him, how's Derek Chauvin doing in prison?
Oh, he apparently he's being held apart from everybody else, and he apparently is on suicide watch.
You think he would kill himself? Okay, well, here's a real question. Let's cut to the chase here. What is his connection with the Clintons?
I mean, I think, you know, I think they're trying to keep him away from Hillary and Bill. And that's really going to keep him alive till his appeal.
Did he ever provide security for Vince Foster?
It's hard to say. I mean, at his age, it's very possible. As a young police officer, he could have.
Did he own any land in Arkansas? Like, if he has no attachment to the Clintons, I say he doesn't need to be on suicide watch.
All right. I mean, he didn't own any whitewater, so I think maybe it'll be all right. I think maybe he is a little bit worried about what might happen to cops that go to prison.
Oh, is that usually a problem?
I hear things that it might be.
Yeah, I would say that guy should just kill himself.
Well, we'll see. Maybe he will soon join our next very popular segment, Celebrity Obituaries. We did lost a few this week, Brian, starting off with rapper and former Bad Boy artist, Black Rob, passing away at the age of 52, very young. Did they say what the cause of death was?
He had a stroke, I believe, and was in the hospital. But can I make a confession?
I guess.
I don't know who Black Rob is.
I wasn't 100% sure either.
People have said to me, have mentioned to me Black Rob, and I have feigned sadness over it. But apparently he was on Bad Boy Records with Puff Daddy. And then I don't really know any songs that he came out with.
Well, were you aware of Idris Deby? Or Deby, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing
it. Idris Elba?
No, Idris Deby, president of...
Stringer Bell? Stringer Bell died?
Former president
Uncle Freddy. Of... Former president of Chad.
He had ruled with an iron fist for 3 decades, had just secured a 6th term in office, and was killed as soldiers clashed with the rebels. So maybe not the best idea to have the president of your country go to the front line when there is a war between soldiers and rebels, but he's gone. This one hurt me because, you know me, Brian. If there is one thing I love, it's a rock opera. And no one did it better than rock legend Jim Steinman, dead at the age of 73, of course, known for the hits that he wrote for Celine, Meatloaf. He wrote Bat Out of Hell, Bat Out of Hell 2. Let's face it, Meatloaf would not have any hits if it weren't for Jim Steinman.
Didn't he write a song for Air Supply?
It's very possible. Yes, he wrote and composed Making Love Out of Nothing at All. Barry Manilow's Read 'Em and Weep. He wrote and produced Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart. It's All Coming Back to Me Now, which was covered by Celine Dion. Also worked with Def Leppard, Barbra Streisand, Billy Squire, and the Sisters of Mercy.
Did you say the Sisters of Mercy? The
Sisters of Mercy. I did say okay. That.
Take it for a moment, because I need to find out what he did with the Sisters of Mercy, because they are one of my favorites.
Also, talk about his accomplishments, for 3 straight weeks in 1983, he was responsible for the number 1 and number 2 songs on the Billboard 100. Total Eclipse was in the top spot. Making Love was second. He wrote I Need a Hero, another great tune. So the man, all he did was write hits.
He produced 3 of my favorite Sister of Mercy songs, This Corrosion, Dominion, and More. Wow.
I mean,
now I actually feel bad. You don't understand. My childhood growing up listening to Top 40 was dominated by this guy's songs.
There you go. Now you know he was a very important piece in Brian's development. And then lastly, we lost a political icon, ex-vice president, ex-presidential contender, Walter Mondale Fritz, passing away at the age of 93. He was a champion of liberal politics, activist government, and civil rights. Unfortunately, probably known best for losing to Ronald Reagan in a landslide. He passed away in his home on Monday.
Jesus would have lost to Reagan that in 1984.
Yeah, he was on a president role.
Nobody could. But there was one thing about Mondale that I liked a lot about him, is that he was a prolific writer.
He was. And
he was always publishing works, documenting his thoughts for everyone, future generations and whatnot. That was one thing I always respected about him.
And what was touching is apparently he had written a letter to his staff to be read after his death. And
really,
it felt like he kind of, like a lot, our listeners don't realize this. Brian and I also had done the same thing 3 years ago when we first started this podcast. We were like, let's write letters to be read after we die. So I don't know if Fritz stole that from us, but we decided, hey, why not? You know, it's been a few years. Why not read our post-death letters while we're still alive? Brian, do you have your letter handy?
So this is after we die.
Right, exactly.
We want others to read this letter. These are our walking away thoughts to the world after we die. But we are going but we wrote them while we're alive.
Exactly.
And we're going to read them now.
We're going to read them now, because you never know. We could be hit by a bus tomorrow. You don't know. So, Brian, I will defer to you if you want to start with your post-death letter. With the whistle. Throw going.
Unique New York. Unique New York. Dear world, if you are reading this, it can mean one thing. I have passed away, and my body is no longer filled by my soul. I have escaped this earth in this vessel. Is there an afterlife, you may be asking? How the hell would I know? I'm writing this while I'm still alive. What a stupid, stupid question to ask me now. But please do not mourn my death. I certainly am not. I don't want anyone to feel saddened by this. I certainly am not. For as long as I can remember, death was not something I feared. In fact, it was something I looked forward to. The life I have led has never been something that needs to be extended longer than it was meant to be. I was unhappy as a child. I was unhappy as a teenager. I was an unhappy adult. It never changed. Frankly, when I would hear that somebody passed away, my first unfiltered emotion would be jealousy. Not sadness, not grief, jealousy. So now I am dead, and I hope that I have done something in this life which would make the world better. I don't expect to have changed the world. People will not remember me in 100 years. My only hope is that I have made the lives of those around me a little bit better. Without ever consciously acknowledging it, I figured that my life was never going to be better. So the least I could do is try to improve my friends' lives. Maybe it was a smile. Maybe it was with a laugh. Perhaps I provided some good advice that helped them make a better decision. That's all I could have hoped for. So if you are reading this letter and you knew me, please look back and ask yourself if I helped make your life better in some way. If the answer is yes, then my existence was worth it. I suffered through this life, so maybe you would suffer less. Sincerely, Brian Gary Perlis.
You went a little darker there than I was expecting, but very, very touching, very heartfelt. Mine, I was a little bit more succinct. I kept it a little bit to the point, and I was anticipating.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Did you just start off with like I just literally exposed my raw emotions? The first thing out of your fucking mouth is that like you're a little bit more succinct with your word. Like you did a better job editing than I did.
Did not do a better job. My point more was is mine was not as elaborate, not as deep as yours was. And I also took the tact of thinking that this was going to be read 20, 30 years down the line. So if you've listened to this show, you know we're pretty good at our predictions. So I tried to make some predictions for the future and work them into this post-death letter. So just also please keep that in mind. Dear world, first, let me reiterate my disappointment in never seeing flying cars in my lifetime. I can't help but think that if some of the people working on sex robots all these years focused on the flying car issue, we would have them. However, I do want to thank the scientists that perfected human cloning, as that is the only thing that has allowed the Ron and Brian podcast to continue for as long as it has, since Brian was killed, maimed, or otherwise incapacitated by wives 3 through 12. To our loyal listeners, thank you for following us all these years, even after racism was completely eradicated and the only acceptable hatred left was that towards Mets fans. I considered it a privilege to be able to tell you weekly how someone wearing the blue and orange was spit on, cursed, or not allowed into restaurants. For our Patreon subscribers, know that I truly loved you most. For those that are still holding Labor Smart stock, I truly feel this is the week it hits 10 cents a share. Diamond hands, my friends. Diamond hands. And if I predecease my podcast partner, Brian, you have my blessing to marry my widow. Just keep her away from sharp objects and other weapons. Godspeed. And I have to pull up this Billy comment. Brian only bailed out 5 of those wives that killed, maimed, or otherwise incapacitated.
Well, if I bailed out 5 of those wives, I meant that means that I am financially doing much better in the future than I have enough money to bail out 5 wives.
That's very true. Very true. Brian, I think more importantly, though, What are you watching?
Oh, this week, this past week, you know, Life of Agony documentary, The Sound of Scars.
Yes.
Now, normally, you know me, I like to, I'm pretty loose with the English language. I take certain liberties, make some assumptions. I have referred to a lot of things that we have watched or read as reviewer copies. I don't know I would necessarily say are legitimately reviewer copies licensed by the publishing arm of the corporation that we are providing said artwork from. This week, we legitimately received a reviewer's copy.
We did.
Ron and I, this past Friday, you in your home with your lovely wife, soon to be wife number 11, we sat and watched the documentary. It's about 90 minutes or so, yep. Telling the story of the band Life of Agony, along with a very personal expose about inside the minds of the main members of the band, along with their childhoods, how they grew up, how their upbringing enabled them to become the people that they are today. I think one of the amazing things about this was just what felt like brutal honesty, openness about who they were, the dark thoughts. You know, I just read my death letter that I want to be read. That was 100% truth. It was total honesty. It was as legitimate as I could offer. And I think I was inspired by the fact that watching this documentary, it felt like it was a, hello world. This is me. This is who I am. And what I, as somebody who does know the members of the band, I would consider myself friends with them. I learned a lot about their past. I've spent hours in rooms with these people and learned more watching this documentary about them than I did in conversations I've had with them.
Yeah, it was. I mean, again, you had me. You're obviously a big fan of the band. I'm not as familiar. You had me listen to the album Sound of Scars when it came out, and we did the review of it then. And I think I said when we reviewed the album, like, you know, this is a band that I really would have wanted to see a documentary about, because it does seem like, I mean, they're all very talented individuals and they all seem like they have some interesting stories. So I was looking forward to the documentary. I did not expect it to be as deep and as emotional and as gripping and as touching as it was. And, yeah. You know, again, I think, you know, what for me makes a great documentary is when you don't necessarily need to be a fan of the subject matter. And you don't necessarily need to be a fan of the band. You don't necessarily need to be a fan of the music, because there's so much else that you can take away from the documentary. The emotion, Joey talking to his dad, Alan talking about his struggles with depression, you know, Mina talking about her transition. There are so many very real topics addressed in this documentary that affects so many people around the world. And, you know, for all of these people to be dealing with their individual struggles and yet still functioning as a band and putting out, you know, great music. I thought it was great. I would recommend it. Even if you're not familiar with Life of Agony, if you don't know the band, you don't know the music, I just think it's a really great, well-done, important documentary to watch.
One of the things that I have tried to do in my life over the past, I don't know, maybe 5, 7, 10 years, is to acknowledge how difficult life is, and the universal experience of how difficult life is. That what you may look at someone from on the outside and just project a fantasy life onto them and assume that they don't have struggles and assume that they don't have insecurities or you know, or other blows to their, you know, to this great life. So I think I've embraced this approach of just being brutal, of just being honest about what is going on with me, so that in the hopes that other people will feel more comfortable acknowledging what they're going through, so that you don't feel as alone as a lot of people do. I think social media has definitely played a part in, you know, putting out this very fantastical version of what people think their lives are and what they think other people's lives are. And I think one of the things that really struck me with the documentary was that it was very much a, this is who we are. This is where we came from. This is why we grew to be the people that we were. And at the same time, as dark and depressing at times as it was, there's one scene where Alan, the bass player, his parents are reading lyrics he wrote as a teenager about how he wants to kill himself. And they're sitting there saying, we don't understand where these thoughts were coming from. We're happy people, and we thought we were raising a happy son. We have no idea where this dark cloud came from.
Or the letter he wrote to his sister when he was out on tour. I mean, that was very deep, very, very tough.
Yeah. Or you know, the scene where Joey, like you mentioned, his father, when his father's sitting there talking about how, you know, and this isn't necessarily a spoiler, but when his father was at his lowest, and how, I mean, you're seeing raw pain there.
Yep.
You know, that's not acting at all. Mina talking about her father, when he lost his life, it's hard not to sit there and feel the pain, but also feel a level of respect towards another human being for being willing to open up the layers of protection to say, this is really who I am. And I think what's incredible is how they have been able to take these the different paths of struggle and all end up in a much more positive place, you know. Like, and what I thought was interesting is that there was a comment in there of like, you know, it's not always perfect, but it's, you know, it's you got to be, you know, you're leading a much happier life. You're leading a better existence now, looking back on it. But I think there is an offer to the viewer of a sense of optimism, which I think kind of trails with their music, where it's their first album was all about suicide, very depressing. And I feel like the album that they just put out just about a year and a half ago I walked away from that album with a sense of, yes, life can be difficult, but there is reason to be optimistic. And I just, you know, it's still available. Yeah. We have the website. Can we put it up? Go to the website, click get tickets, go buy a ticket. It's streaming now through May 3rd. You can watch it as many times as you want. It was great. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it as well. Brian, what else you watch?
I watched a documentary on Hulu, WeWork.
Yes.
The making and unmaking of a $47 billion unicorn. Now, I did not realize you had watched this before.
I had. We watched this a few weeks back. The trailer made it seem very interesting. And we, you know, my wife, when she was working in an office, was in the same building as we work in Philadelphia. So she was familiar with the
business plan.
So it was. Well, give me your take on the documentary.
I thought it was fascinating. Yeah. I always I was not very plugged in with what WeWork was doing as a business. I knew that what they were offering was shared workspaces, which was not revolutionary. Other companies were doing it. I knew that it was a media darling. I knew it was getting a lot of positive press. working in construction in New York, I came across somebody I was interviewing who actually had converted an office building into a We Live.
Yes.
That was the first I had heard that they were expanding the business model from shared workspaces now to we'll rent out floors 1 through 5 for shared workspaces, but floors 6 through 19 are dormitory style housing units so that if you work downstairs, your home is upstairs, you never need to leave the building. And I just remember getting a very much a, ooh, this feels culty to me. Like they feed you, there's a cafeteria, like they don't want you to leave the house, ever leave the building. So, and then I just became superficially aware that they were trying to go public. And as soon as they had released the financial documents, it was amazing how the fall from grace and how quick it was as people realized that this company was not successful in any way, shape, or form, and right. that it was bleeding cash left and right. This documentary does an amazing job of following the rise of it, talking to people who are plugged in, insiders. And then there's the tipping point, and you pretty much watch its fall.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was amazing. The one thing they keep touching on is that people kept valuing WeWork as like it was a tech company. And I think one guy, you know, put it very succinctly. He was like, they rent desks.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, it was to see like the annual picnic / parties that they did. I mean, the guy who was the CEO and his wife.
Newman, wasn't it Newman? Hello,
Newman. Both seem like megalomaniacal psychopaths, but a fascinating documentary.
But see, that what I thought was fascinating was that he seemed a complete narcissist, like a just an out of control narcissist who suddenly felt that because he was married to his wife, that necessarily automatically transferred the same level of respect that he had earned in the business community to her, to the point that in the financial documents during their IPO, he put that if there was any reason where he became incapacitated, she would select who would be his successor.
Yeah.
Not the investors, not a board of directors, but his wife would decide who would continue the company.
Right. Billy just pointed this out, and I'm seeing this coming through on Twitter right now. Some breaking news. Gregory Jacobs, you know him as Shock G or Humpty Hump from Digital Underground.
Dead, the guy with the nose.
Yep. Dead at the age of 57. I'm not getting nothing additional just yet, but many people online, Biz Markie, Death Row Records, a lot of people coming out and saying that he has passed away.
Here's your chance, do your dance, do the hump.
So, I
do
mean,
the humpty hump.
I think what you have to do, Brian, is you will have to prepare next week. I think you will need to, in Shock G's honor. You haven't done it.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I'm thinking next week you need to prep a slow jam obituary for Humpty Hump. So you've got a week to prepare.
I'm writing this down now because I will forget it. I guarantee you I will forget it. So I'm going to write this.
That'll be the big thing for next week. The big thing, 2 weeks from now, we celebrate 3 years of the Ron and Brian podcast. That's right. I believe May 7th is the evening. Thursday, May 7th is the night. It will be 3 years since we dropped our very first episode. And we have had many people reach out to us. I mean, I know, Brian, you kind of touched on it in your death letter, how people, you know, you want people to know that you make a difference, and they have reached out to us and they have said, you know, Ron and Brian, our lives have become much better in the 3 years that you've been doing this podcast. But we're a little bit too humble to share a lot of this on our own. May 6th, I'm being corrected. Excuse me, Thursday, May 6th. So we are asking you, if you want to do a video or audio, whatever you're comfortable with, and talk about how Ron and Brian has positively impacted your life, you can shoot that over to Matt Beaker, our producer. He is available at producer@ronandbrianpodcast.com. So send an MP3, MP4, whatever you want. Talk about the good, the joy, the love that we have brought into your lives. And we'll be happy to play them on that 3-year anniversary special.
I could obviously spend 5 minutes talking about how you have changed my life.
And I could spend 5 minutes talking about you.
But at the end of the day, we are doing this for you, the fans, the listeners, the friends, the family.
Yes.
And therefore, I think it would be most appropriate if you tell us how we have changed your life.
We don't want to, you know, we understand as middle-aged white men, our voices get heard way too often.
Yes.
We the voices of you, the people, to really get across how amazing we are.
Every week we sit here for an hour and 15 minutes and we talk. We talk.
A lot.
It's time for us to sit down and listen.
Yes.
And this is your opportunity to stand up and be heard. So once again, email address. It'd be great if we had that to put up down below.
You want that down below, the email address? That's not it. That's soundofscars.com, which you
should also check out. This is an opportunity for you to let us know. So it is producer@ronandbrianpodcast.com. Now you may be sitting there saying, holy shit, you guys have your own domain. That's incredible. It's not that difficult. Go to godaddy.com, not sponsored. There you go. That's the email address. Go to that email address. Shoot us an email. Send us a video. Send us an audio. Make a collage. If you want to do an NFT.
Ooh, those
that,
are
that will be available on Coinbase. Whatever form of media you want to use about how we have entered your life and made it better, that's the email address. I send it to you in 2 weeks on our third anniversary show. We will air them.
Oh, and also real big next week, since it is the final Thursday of the month, if you are a part of our Patreon, you know that you get to attend our After Dark episode that starts at 9:30 right after this one. Well, every final Thursday of the month is our pajama party where we let you guys come on live with us. And we just have one big old gab fest. It's just fun. It's just a little coffee clutch.
It's usually about an hour. We dress to impress. We'll wear pajamas. We'll wear, one of these days we're going to bust out the smoking jackets. But we let our Patreons come on. They join us, on the show all at the same time. It's like a 1 hour episode of the Brady Bunch minus, the implied incest.
There you go. And if you are interested in joining the Patreon, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. Upper right-hand corner, there's a link to become a patron. If you join at the bronze level or higher, that's $10 a month or more. You can join us live. The $5 level, you just get access to the video and audio afterwards. But you want to join us live. We're going to do it in like, 16 minutes? We're going to hop on.
16 minutes. And we have got some spicy, sexy stories lined up. If you have not Googled Yanet Garcia, now's the time to do it. Famed Mexican weather woman.
Oh, yes. She's got her own OnlyFans now. So
we're
saying too much. We're saving it. We are saving
it for after dark. There's a reason why there's a paywall. Also, some very exciting changes coming up for our third year anniversary. It's time for us to close one book and open the other. And that new book has many amazing chapters. Some have been written, some are being written, and some are blank pages that are going to be filled in by you, the listener.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up on this week's edition of the Ron and Brian podcast. We're going to get ready for After Dark. So Patreon folks, we will see you in a few minutes. Brian, anything additional to add this week?
Yes. Quick. How are we doing stock-wise?
Stocks up the last couple of days.
No.
Stonks.
How are we doing stock-wise?
Labor Smart back up, pushing 6 cents again. We've had a couple of green days in a row. Disney doing well. Norwegian Cruise Line's doing well. So we are hoping to get it to the moon. I got the hydrogen water in. Brian's waiting for his. We will sample it live on the broadcast once we have it. There you have it. There's our final update for the week. I think we're ready to get ready for Left of Dark, don't you, Brian?
I love you, Ron.
Love you more, my friend. We will see you next week.